And welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I have not read any of the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I've read every book in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, and, several Wikipedia articles as well.
We are here for the Endgame's mailbag. All Starks are in danger for the end of Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame this week with your questions. But first, this is your weekly reminder. You need to be at Con of Thrones July 12th through 14th in Nashville. Use promo code STORM when you buy your tickets at checkout. Save a little money. Come see us. Come see Joanna talk to Jaime Lannister.
Maybe. We don't know that yet.
That's fair enough. We don't know it. We don't know that yet. Well, certainly Joanna will be attempting to talk to Jaime Lannister, while Neil and I will be with the chloroform rags.
Yes.
Because that's Come much more reliable.
Scream at Nicola Coster-Waldau from across a hotel lobby.
Okay. Is this a kidnapping plot?
I loved you and Mama. Come back.
Mama.
Yes, it's going to be a kidnapping movie, Neil.
Cool. Make sure you use promo code STORM to get your tickets for that one.
Yes, exactly. Pivoting quickly back to our show, Joanna, do we have any reviews now that we're back off our off season and on our shit with Game of Thrones?
We do. We have some reviews. We've got a few four-star reviews, which is really interesting. I'm going to read the first interesting four-star review because this one is like, I don't know what we lost the star for. Four stars, my podcast to nerd out from every new day, I think. I'm not supposed to read the X's. Anyway. I love listening to podcasts during my commute, and Storm of Spoilers is top of my list every week to listen to. The hosts have great chemistry and insight. I really appreciate their opinions, both during the Game of Thrones season and on their off-season tour. Even topics for shows, movies I'm not super into, I still listen to, and I'm always happy that I did. I did become part of their Patreon this year and love being part of the community that loves nerd culture as much as I do, whether it's discussing Game of Thrones theories, fun socks, the MCU, or stories of falling down, hashtag didn't make it 2019 in their Slack. I don't always agree with the host. Okay, maybe that's where we lost the star. I don't always agree with the host, but I love their discussions and look forward to what each week it will bring. I hope they continue after the final season is done with a long-term off-season tour, or it will feel like I've lost friends I've got to know over the past few years. Does that sound pathetic? I have real-life friends, I swear, but I want to make you guys feel bad to make sure you keep entertaining me. This is the Game of Thrones podcast you should be listening to if you're a fan and prepping for the final season. Thanks for all your hard work and insight. Keep up the great work, Joanna, Dave, and Neil. So that, I think we got a four-star, maybe not for the disagreement, but maybe because this person is like trying to nag us a little bit and is like, stick around.
This review could be updated at any time via iTunes.
And then we got another four-star review, and this one, like, I'm surprised we even got four stars because it's just like, Joanna sucks, right? Feedback for JR from Joanna Joy, and I did post this on Twitter, but you get to hear it again. I really enjoy JR's articles and commentary. However, I'd like to give her some constructive feedback regarding her vocal work. I understand that she is a writer by trade and not a voice actor, but it would benefit everyone if she'd work on her diction and enunciation. Her voice in general on the air isn't pleasant, but I truly believe that if she play back her audio and fine-tune her phrasing and overall lazy speaking, it would be a big help. Thanks. So that's from Joanna Joy. So stabbed in the back by another Joanna. Well, she's like a Johanna. I've never trusted a Johanna. But anyway, so those are our 2 4-star reviews. If you like listening to this podcast and want to drop us a 5-star review, we would love that. So, find us, rate us, review us. Thanks so much.
That was a very gracious way to take that review from a weird person with 2 J's. J first name, J last name. This just seems like too many J's to me. If I've learned anything from J.J. Abrams, you could not trust those mystery box people.
I think this is also still my section, so I'll hit these other few things, which is that we've got a bonus segment this week, right? Which is how we, I think Neil usually does this, but it's in my section, so I'm going to say it. We have a bonus segment this week. It's how we hope Game of Thrones ends. So that is for our Maester level $5 Patreon and above subscribers, you can get, this is like the last of the regular bonus segment before Game of Thrones starts. How do we hope Game of Thrones ends, is what we will be discussing in the bonus segment.
We're going to talk about our feelings.
That will come out on Friday. And then next week, starting with Game of Thrones season, because I don't know if you've heard, but Game of Thrones comes back this Sunday. We're ramping up the bonus episode. So if you're a $5 Patreon subscriber and you like Game of Thrones, I know for a fact that we have like at least one Patreon subscriber who does not watch Game of Thrones. So sorry, bud. We will see you in 2 months thereabouts. But otherwise, if you are a Patreon subscriber at the $5 and above level, you will get our hot take reaction podcasts on Monday, I think, or Tuesday, Dave. Anyway, they'll be early in the week. You will get our hottest of hot takes, little bonus pods. They might, the audio might be a little like slightly rough and tumble, but we just want to get it out to you as quickly as possible. So hot take reaction pod, $5 and above. That's happening. Middle of the week, you'll get our regular episode where we will talk about Game of Thrones. That's happening. And at the end of the week, if you're a $10 and above subscriber, if you're in the small council, as we call them, we're doing what Neil has branded the small council sessions, which means we will be taking your questions for an extra mailbag episode related to Game of Thrones. It's going to hit you at the end of the week. So if you are at the $10 or above level on our Patreon, you are going to get not one, not two, but three episodes per week. And no, we are not paywalling all of our Game of Thrones content, because as we said, our regular episode's still going to drop in the middle of the week. It will be...
It's still going to be grotesquely long.
For everyone who wants to listen to it, you know, whether or not you're in our Patreon. But if you like listening to us, you want to hear more from us, now is the time to hit that subscribe button on the Patreon. Go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers and join us for this final season. All right, I am done.
Hooray. Excellent. They're going to be so sick of hearing us talk. It's going to be hilarious.
Unless
somebody
they're
get
not.
Like weird. Somebody get weird unexpected laryngitis, and then be like the king of whispers.
Oh, please, God, don't wish that on me. It's allergy season here.
You know,
the queen of whispers.
Like Lady Stoneheart shows up in our podcast.
Mm-hmm. That would be such a plague across like multiple podcasts. You know, chaos is a ladder, so even if that happens, we'll give you ASMR casts. ASMR. Neil!
Uh-huh. Yes.
Bill ran
save
that
me.
Dave, it's time to go storm chasing.
Pew! Pew, pew!
I believe you're familiar with this segment, which may or may not be in the episodes. Next week, who knows? We haven't figured that part out yet. But storm chasing, so we talk about one thing, movie, book, story, whatever, TV show, that we've been chasing that is not related to our current topic, which our current topic is Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame. I will start. I recently finished up watching The Grand Tour, which, as you know, I'm a big fan, despite all the weird old British guy stuff. Here's what I love about The Grand Tour. The reason I recommend it, I'm a big fan of cinematography, as you know. And when they do their specials, they are really like the crew that shoots and edits The Grand Tour. They make a very cool film no matter what else happens. Just so happens that this one also has some pretty good human drama in it. It's about the three hosts having to traverse all of Mongolia in a car that they built in a field. And they only had 7 days worth of food. It's pretty great watching them suffer, and it's very beautifully shot. And if you are a low-key car person like myself, you might enjoy it. So that's my storm chasing this week. The Grand Tour, Mongolia special.
The Grand Tour Magnolia special is a completely different
thing. It's directed by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah.
anyway, Joanna, what have you brought for us this week?
Cool. So I already talked about this recently, but I'm doing it again just because I am so obsessed. Fleabag season 2 just wrapped up in the UK, and I watched it. And it is maybe one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life. I was like, you know how you go to the optometrist sometime and they're like, what if you didn't sit so closely to your screen? I was like pressed up against my screen, so like engrossed and emotional and interested in the finale of Fleabag season 2. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. This is it. She's done after this. So like that means like 12 perfect episodes of television exist that Phoebe Waller-Bridge has made about her character Fleabag. If you've never watched it before and you're in the US, you can watch it on Amazon. Season 2 will hit Amazon May 17th. So not that far away. But watch season 1 if you haven't already to get like caught up and ready. And then season 2 is just like effing incredible. It's so good. Also, I mean, like, I suspect I will talk about this a little more. I'm like just trying to think of like what I've seen that has not been Game of Thrones. I'll say this. I watched the last two episodes of Schitt's Creek and I also got really emotional about that. So, I don't know. I think I've seen one more episode maybe than is released for the rest of y'all, but like, this final season, penultimate season of Schitt's Creek also gets really, really good at the end, which they are really good at doing it, like sort of twisting the emotions right at the end of the season. So, a lot of really good stuff on Schitt's Creek and Fleabag, a Canadian and British import. There is other TV in the world besides Game of Thrones, we swear. Dave, what is on your storm chasing?
Well, guys, I don't know if you've ever had one of those weeks where by the time the podcast where you talk about your week comes out, like half the stuff that you've been doing will have already been available to people and the other half of stuff you've been doing you can't talk about for several months or maybe more than a year. So Dave beat Pokemon as an update for last week, which was fun, but then also seated me with those old fond memories of 2016, summer 2016, a carefree summer of debating who should head the Democratic Party without like this weird threat of apocalypse over us, we thought. Anyway, so I decided to open Pokemon Go again, and it's basically been a completely different game that has motivated me to get walking. I've developed a little bit of a circuit that takes me to the walkable distance Shake Shack that is very close to me. So burgers and Pokemon Go came back this week to make me feel like I was being a productive outside person, and then also, you know, feeding my comfort zone with burgers. So that's unfortunately the only storm I have for you this week. It's not pop culture. And really, now that I'm thinking about it and remembering last week, I should have come armed with a think piece. I'm sorry I failed you, Neil.
No, it's okay. You did give me an idea, which is now I need to live within walking distance of a Shake Shack.
It is pretty sweet because you're like, it's okay, I'm walking this off, which isn't true, but it's that internal.
Yeah, I need it to be like 2 miles away. That feels like enough walking.
Dave was like, because Dave and I have been working a lot on, we've all been working a lot, but Dave and I have been working a lot on this other podcast project that I'm doing for VF since a new episode drops every like 3 days. Like it's just constant communication. And at one point the other day I messaged Dave and he didn't message me back for a while and it was no problem. I had no stress about it, but his response was like, I'm sorry, I went outside. like we're not allowed outside. So anyway, yeah,
well, you got to do one more thing before Game of Thrones starts. It should be outside for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yes, it's spring out here and a long winter in my fictional mind.
Have I ever told you guys about the, like, the Twitter account I follow that, like, sends me, like...
You have. You got me following it. Oh, okay. And I retweeted it the other day.
Wait, what?
Reminded me to drink water. Oh, let's redo it for Neil.
Yeah.
This is very important. Go ahead, Joanna.
I don't remember what it's called. What is it called? Care something? Self-care? I don't know. All I know is that
you describe it, I'll look it up.
Okay. It's the only Twitter account that I've set to like alert to my phone. So it's like getting a text message, right? To your phone when you have like, you mm-hmm. can track a certain account and it's just like self-care messages and it basically comes once an hour and it's like, adjust your posture, please. Remember to drink water. Have you eaten something? Text a friend back. Like it's really not that many. I would say that there's like probably 20 of them that they cycle and they mix it up. And it's just like, it's like my phone chimes. I look down and it's someone telling me to take care of myself, but not in a shitty, judgy way. And it's just like actually really lovely. So, yeah. And I like that it tells me to drink water and stuff like that. So anyway, that's, I don't know. It's not storm chasing. What is it called, Dave?
I'm scrolling back as far as possible, but that was a great amount of vampy. It's called Tiny Carebot.
Tiny Care Bot.
Tiny Care Bot.
Tiny Care Bot.
Yeah, it's really great. And
I'm going to follow this. It's going to be
life-changing. Yeah. And then set up the alerts. And then like it'll be like, drink some water. You're like, huh, I should have some water. What a great idea, Tiny Care Bot. Thanks so much.
Oh, so robots making us better people instead of turning into Skynet. Who knew? Not James Cameron.
Do you guys know, like, one thing that I know about season 8 of Game of Thrones? It's not, like, really spoilery, but I know it.
Robin Arryn ends up on the Iron Throne.
Yes, Robin Arryn, obviously. But also, I know that the Army of the Dead is coming to Westeros. Some of our heroes are converging on Winterfell, and they need some more help, okay? Because the Unsullied are coming and the Dothraki are coming, but, like, I don't know if that's enough. So, what I suggest... The King of the North, Jon Snow, the Queen of Dragons, Daenerys Targaryen, Sansa Stark, all the rest. I suggest they use ZipRecruiter. It's much more efficient than sending a raven. And if you send a raven, you never know. You might get help from King's Landing, which is maybe not help you want, because maybe that's a bad hire. But if they use ZipRecruiter, they'll find exactly what they need to fight the Night King. And I suggest they go to ZipRecruiter.com/storm.
So you're saying if they were out there looking for, say, a bunch of soldiers in a kingdom way down south who haven't been doing anything through this whole experience, they could search on ZipRecruiter, and ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology would find them soldiers in Dorne who could apply for their job?
Yeah, the soldiers in Dorne are just looking to be hooked up with the right employer. And ZipRecruiter will send Sansa or Arya or Daenerys or Jon or Davos, if he knows how to read by this point, to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But ZipRecruiter does not stop there.
See, the other thing that ZipRecruiter has over something like ravens is ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post to ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within, like, the first day. That's Littlefinger level speed in terms of getting around the map. That is much faster than anything on Wing, and certainly much faster than things you can't trust to not peck out your eyes when you're dead.
So you're telling me that they could find the other 5 sand snakes on ZipRecruiter and bring them up north where the whole world needs them.
So, like, as applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And yeah, like within the first day, because we have no time to waste. The Night King is here. The wall is down. It's time to go. 6 episodes left. Let's do it. Northerners, I believe in you. Get on ZipRecruiter. Win this battle. If they are listening to this podcast, The Family Stark, Daenerys Targaryen, any of you listening to this podcast, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/storm. That's ZipRecruiter.com/STORM. ZipRecruiter.com/storm.
If you are new to Star Wars Spoilers and you have joined us for this, the final season of Game of Thrones, you might need to know that we theme our spoiling and non-spoiling tags. That's right. The Calm is for non-spoiling things, and The Storm is for very spoilish things. I don't exactly know how it's going to play out for Game of Thrones, but just so you get into the lingo here, if we're in The Calm, you could listen without having seen Avengers Endgame or the final season of Game of Thrones, much like we haven't. For The Storm sections, we will be speculating using our giant, big media critic brains.
Wow.
And maybe, what?
Nothing. Just like, I like giant, big media critic brains. Woo! All right.
Yeah, the greatest thing when you're saying is smart is to just say as many words that mean the same thing over and over again. Pause for applause. All right. So, in the Storm section, that's where we'll be using our expert knowledge to speculate on your questions about the conclusion points of Avengers Endgame and Storm of Spoilers final season. There's not much differentiation. Game of Thrones final season. Both. I laugh at your pain.
Wow.
All right. First, The Calm. This involves non-spoiler questions about Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame. This first one is about Avengers from Stacy via email. Do you think there is any way that the Far From Home trailer does not play before Endgame because even though nearly everyone knows Spider-Man is coming back, I still think it will kind of ruin the vibe to see an alive Peter and Nick Fury minutes before we see Tony mourning Peter.
Yeah, it's going to be super weird.
Oh, you think they're going to do it? You think they're going to put the trailer there?
I don't know, but it would be weird.
You wouldn't just have, like, Gyllenhaal shock to carry you through the opening moments?
Let's ask Joanna. She probably has a good answer.
Do I? you mean, like, a new one?
Or I think a new one I don't think is going to happen. I think we'll get a new trailer soon after Endgame opens. But I think the question is, do you think Marvel or Disney, usually a company that's distributing a film, gets to attach, you know, some trailers that play with all of the movies. Usually those movies are like the next thing they want you to be excited about. In this case, it would be Spider-Man Far From Home. Are they going to either for our bladders quickly filling up with pre-show drinks that were a bad idea, or for like maintaining the story that we jump into where Peter Parker's dead, just forgo the Far From Home trailer entirely?
I think we're getting it. Yes. Homecoming's happening.
Yeah, I feel like they...
Vibe ruining Homecoming is happening.
Yeah, I think it's just, I think what Stacey's getting at here too is that it's just going to be like a surreal thing. Be like, here's the trailer for the movie where this hero is alive that's coming out in a couple months. And then here's the movie where he's totally dead, we promise.
I think it's a good question. I bet there was an internal conversation about it, but I also bet Sony was like, oh no, you are not leaving us out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we made a deal, Feige, don't fuck us.
Well, I guess the other suggestion would be they run, if there is like a secret new one, it runs at the end. But we'll talk more about that when we get into the storm, what we think's gonna be at the end of the end of the end of Avengers Endgame.
Oh.
Ooh, yeah. I actually do like that sort of workaround.
Like a stinger sort of situation?
Yeah, like,
either do it as a stinger or have a like Avengers Endgame only trailer of Far From Home that's like much more somber and maybe doesn't show Spider-Man or something. That would give new footage and...
See, that would be fun too. Like, you do cut a trailer where it's like Spider-Man's dead.
I think that would be hilarious.
But I don't think Sony thinks it's funny, but it'd be funny to me.
I mean, it'd be fun to see, like, because we know from Spider-Man Far From Home that by the time Spider-Man's on the scene, Mysterio's already on the scene. So maybe you could do, like, an old Marvel short and do at CinemaCon, they did a two versions of Sonic tease footage, one that was Sonic-centric and one that was Dr. Robotnik-centric. It's like a Mysterio tease. I don't know. Anyway, not important, but would be cool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much cool
just Zendaya.
Yes, Mary Jane's summer vacation.
Yeah.
So Mary Jane's European trip, like a little Tom Green cameo for some reason. All right, moving on.
Who doesn't love this Euro trip reference?
Exactly. Dating myself because no one else will. This question about Game of Thrones from Brian of Tarth in the Slack. Do you think the potential prequel/spinoff series will be nearly as popular as Game of Thrones, or will excitement fade once this is complete? Joanna gets the first throw this time.
I think it will be big, but not nearly as big as this. How could it possibly be? You know what I mean? I think people will tap out on it, like, no matter how good it is. And I bet it'll be great because I have faith in Jingleman. Like, I think people will tap out on it a little bit because it won't be like Jon and Daenerys and stuff like that. If you look at Better Call Saul, or Fear the Walking Dead. Like, these are shows that are popular, but not nearly the conversation shows that their predecessors were. So, that's my assessment. I mean, it's gonna be bigger than Better Call Saul and bigger than Fear the Walking Dead, but it's not gonna be Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is done. We did it. It's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Neil, any differing opinions there?
Well, yeah, I mostly agree. But I think it also kind of depends on how quickly it happens. You know, because what they're still working on getting the pilot together now, right? So in theory, you could have another Game of Thrones show by the end of 2020. That might do well if it comes soon. If we have to wait a long time for it, I think that's where you start to lose people. But we'll see. I think it's interesting that you mentioned Better Call Saul, because a lot of people really like, there was like a layer of fandom stripped away after Breaking Bad went away. And now if you're into Better Call Saul, it's sort of like a really tight knit, very passionate community. That seems, I mean, they really love Better Call Saul almost more than Breaking Bad. So, it'll just be kind of interesting to see how the fandom evolves a little bit. But yeah, I would agree. It's probably never going to reach those heights. You know, this is it. This is Game of Thrones is the big, you know, pop culture event of our lifetime so far. I don't know if anything could live up to that, even though who knows, it could be better.
I've been talking about this a lot on a lot of podcasts, and in interviews, but it's just like, it's, you know, this is it. like if you think about the TV model that Game of Thrones premiered in versus what TV looks like now, it's just not, it's apples and oranges. You know what I mean? So it's like the peak TV streaming culture, binge culture, Netflix domination, Amazon, Apple, everyone throwing something at the wall, HBO itself ramping up its content by 50% by the end of the year, like all that stuff is just sort of like, there's no chance for a show to, you know, which just goes to like the I'm done. It's not like even for me, so I'm done.
I'm going to say that I do think there's a possibility that we could come back to this world again with some sort of similar fervor. I don't think it'll be centralized around one show or something like that, but I do think there are potential, you know, with the way George plans story worlds to go off in a lot of different directions at once. And I guess for that comparison, I would hope it goes, you know, more in like, I don't know, like a Star Trek direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, the original series was groundbreaking and huge, and like Next Generation did it, and like, you know, a decade and a half later. And then we had just like way too much Star Trek, but now it's like sort of back and I like it. I would like to see, I think that, A Song of Ice and Fire world can return. I just don't think the sophomore series has good statistical probability for all the reasons you guys mentioned of being that return to form. Like, I think the material and the creative people behind it are strong enough.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be good.
Eventually be king.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just yeah. Not, it's just the odds are very much against it. It's a poor summer child, and winter is long.
It's a real Gendry out there rowing.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know what it's going to be when it comes back.
Have you seen, I mean, I think Joe Dempsey has said this before, but I just chuckled again at a recent interview where he said that the reason they had him like kind of shave his head, you know, he has like a bit of a Gendry buzz cut now, is because people kept confusing him with Podrick. Because they're too similar or whatever, and they're like, oh, those cute little black haired boys or whatever. So like Gendry, who's like black hair, I mean, Joe Dempsey doesn't even have black hair. They dyed his hair black in the first season because like that's the whole plot point, is like the black haired baby sort of thing. And so yeah, I just think that's funny. Anyway, sorry. I digress.
Classic. Joe Dempsey, he's one of the good ones.
We love him.
It's not digressing too much because the remainder of our questions are hybrid questions, which bring together the worlds of Avengers Endgame.
Like Gendry, he's a hybrid between a Baratheon and some lady.
I would love for Joe Dempsey to be in a Marvel movie. I think that would be great. Anyway, sorry, what's up?
Ooh, yeah. Okay, so what's up is Stove's End in the Slack says, which Avengers could take on a dragon? Could the Ant-Man Thanos theory be used to defeat a dragon as well?
Could I'm so sorry for
please explain
this
the Thanos theory?
You know,
this
that, like,
makes me so happy.
Wait, like, okay, never mind. No. I'm just gonna say this really quickly before you get started, but I'm gonna let you do it. But I'm just gonna say that, like, Paul Rudd was asked about this on, like,
Kimmel. It's the most uncomfortable thing.
That's so funny. I just, like, bless you, meme culture. Okay, go ahead, please, Dave.
So the internet has decided that the best way to beat Thanos is by having Ant-Man fly up his butt and then grow, thereby
exploding
him. Of
course the internet thinks that.
Yeah, exploding him from his Thanos. That's the Thanos theory. It's been around for a while, but has grown prominence as we get closer to Avengers Endgame. And should you choose to search for memed images or videos of this, that's what you're getting into. So now the question is, two-part question, really. One, which Avengers could take on a dragon? And two, if one of those is Ant-Man, does the Thanos theory defeat a dragon? Neil.
Well, I think there's a couple of Avengers who could take on a dragon. We've seen Thor fight a dragon already, so he's pretty chill with it. After seeing Captain Marvel, spoilers for Captain Marvel, she's super powerful, so she's probably got some game. Yeah, I think most of them would at least try. I think the funniest one would be Captain America, because he'd be like, I can punch it real hard, and he would get eaten. So there's that. Yeah, I don't know about the Thanos thing. I'm not 100% sold on whether or not that would work for Thanos. But I suppose if Ant-Man went Giant Man, then yes, he could defeat just about anything that way.
Wait. The way you phrased that makes it sound like you thought maybe if he just became a regular man, he wouldn't be large enough to burst Thanos open from the inside.
Well, Thanos is a really strong, has a strong constitution as a Titan. That's what I assume based on his species, is that he's muscly, and I don't know if I want to keep talking about this.
Interesting. So really, Ant-Man would try to expand, but just be crushed by the musculature.
Yeah, I mean, Thanos is super strong, right? That's his whole deal. And he has the gauntlet. Yeah. So I don't know if the gauntlet gives him additional strength in the glutes.
Mm.
I'm not 100% sold that Ant-Man could do it.
Excellent.
So
Joanna,
yeah.
Would Avengers taking on a dragon, and can you defeat a dragon by flying up its butt and making yourself big again?
Yeah, so that would be like the Viserianus theory or something like that.
Hey.
Cause like obviously we're exploding the ice dragon. We're not gonna explode it.
The Rhaenys?
Rhaenys? Well, Rhaenys? That's an actual game.
that's Aegon's sister.
Yeah, oops.
Yeah, and then, let's see. I'm gonna back up one of Neil's answers, which was, Carol, who punched her way through a spaceship. So she can punch her way through a dragon. The end.
Yeah, I feel like the Avengers, if we get to the end of Game of Thrones and it's an M. Night Shyamalan thing where they're in the real world and it's just like a theme park, the Avengers are doing security. Full stop.
Full stop. All right. Next question. It's another hybrid. From Sornly of the House Prazathian.
Man,
our
pretty
Slack
good.
Names are doing pretty good. Which franchise has the character that, if they die, would devastate you the most?
So I posted this on Twitter the other day, because, like, you know, we think that, without spoiling anything, we think that, like, probably a bunch of Game of Thrones characters are going to die, like, I think the math is the same weekend as Avengers Endgame comes out. That's when, like, the big battle episode is, right?
This month is so cruel.
That's correct.
So that's not like a spoiler. That's just like, okay, there's their big battle episode that they've been talking about for a really long time is happening on the Sunday after Avengers Endgame opens. So pick the person that you're, like, afraid that's going to die in the battle. For me, it's I'm not afraid, but, like, Jorah Mormont. It's gonna hurt me. You know what I mean? So, like, Jorah Mormont dying and then Steve Trevor dying. in the same weekend. Like, those have been, like, I don't know. No, neither of you have been to my house, but, like, I don't have a lot of, like, I don't know, geek fetishy stuff up. Like, that's not really how I decorate necessarily, but I have two Captain America things and a Jorah Mormont figurine, and that's, like, those are, like, my guys, and I feel like they're both going to be done probably in the same weekend, and I'm like, fuck. So that being said, I'm not like, I'm open to all deaths as long as it's good for the story. You know what I mean? So like, there isn't like a they die and I riot person. You know what I mean? I just know that I'm going to have a bummer time that weekend. Please send chocolate. Thank you.
Hmm. Well, I mean, that I think that please send chocolate applies to lots of weekends, but definitely that weekend. Neil, he's going to rip out your heart.
If Podrick Payne dies, we riot.
Ooh.
That's where I'm at. I can't do it with Pod. I've come to terms with Tormund because once I found out that he did live, he's on borrowed time now. So it's really, and it's obviously a Game of Thrones character if I have to only pick one because of that's going to happen soon. Sooner. Or is it's the recency thing. I don't know. It's weird when I think about this. I don't care about permanence with any Marvel character. So like, I don't feel like I care that they're going to die because they could bring them back. They could, you know, like, so if Game of Thrones kills off a favorite, they're definitely coming back and they're definitely coming back as evil ice zombies. So that's terrible. But if Marvel kills a character, I don't know, somebody could just put a glove on and snap and everybody's fine or whatever. I don't know how that works. So I'm way more worried about the Game of Thrones side because the nightmare does not end with them dying. So it's all about Podrick Payne for me.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to say the history of comic book characters dying and not dying and their legacies living on in one way or another does make Game of Thrones feel more high stakes here. As I've been rewatching, even though this character does occasionally annoy me by making incorrect decisions early on, I do think that when or if Sansa Stark dies, it's going to be the one I didn't see coming. So, like, of all our supporting characters with good hearts, you know, our Missandes and our Grey Worms, whatnot, if they bite it in noble ways, I think that'll be great. But whether or not, because, you know, just from a story standpoint, obviously, I don't want people I like to die. But from Sansa's standpoint,
you didn't just, like, name all the characters of color on the show and say, like, can't wait for them to die, right? No.
Varys, Melisandre, our side characters that we're somewhat invested in from their arcs, and we kind
this
of like...
It's more of an institutional Game of Thrones problem, that know. They put all the characters this of color is, on the second level.
This is not a Dave problem.
A lot of the characters of color are already dead. I can't just count the Dothraki as one person. That seems weird somehow. Yeah, I'm going to go for Sansa because I think that's going to be the one that I think I'm like ready for because I think I'm in politics mode and ready to see, you know, war has consequences. But I think that one might be the unexpected gut punch outside of, you know, the people maybe coming back as whites. Sansa Stark, death number one. Potential death number one.
Ooh, you know what? I had not even considered zombie Sansa Stark, and I'm actually feeling not great about it.
Does she take over for the Night King? Like, she immediately Night gets Queen to be Sansa. In charge?
Yeah, like, just, like, immediately bitch that. Slaps his head in a full 360-degree circle.
She's like, why didn't you get any grain? What's your fucking problem?
Don't you think
I have to get do all the shopping around here.
What if Sansa becomes a Night Queen, and then bitch slaps Robin Aaron's head, like, clean off. Just, like, does the slap again, only this time.
I mean, I know Dave would be very upset about it, but I would think it was awesome.
I would use that gif for so many different emotions.
Sansa Night Queen. We need to, you know.
For sure.
Let's do it.
All right. The final of the calm questions from the Hunter of House John Garden. First of his name. From the Slack. Most interesting crossover buddy cop show, such as Nick Fury and Varys. So buddy cops, one from each, Avengers, and Game of Thrones. Neil.
Yeah, I got one. Yeah. Okay, so I've decided that the only way to save Hawkeye as a character, excuse me, that anyone gives a shit about is to reach in deep into the Game of Thrones lore, pluck out Aang, Guy the Archer, and put them together in a buddy movie about archers. And in my mind, it's sort of like Wreck-It Ralph 2, where Penelope goes and meets all the other Disney princesses, where it's like all the archers from all the fantasy stories. So like Legolas shows up and it's just like an archer party. And I'm not sure what the story is. I don't think it needs a story, actually. It's a buddy cop show. Like, they're going to go find stuff and shoot it with arrows, and they'll have hijinks along the way. So there you go.
Hijinks.
That was one of the things from my rewatch that I was like, I missed that guy. What happened to Aang Guy? And I'm pretty sure he's dead, but I don't know that he's dead. Do we know that he's dead?
Well, that's like what happened to Hawkeye.
Exactly. So they're, you know, two archers from the quill.
What about Lem Lemoncloak? That's what I want to know.
Oh, no. Lem Lemoncloak gets, he gets killed.
Yeah, yeah. That's in season six. Yeah.
Joanna, do you have a buddy cop pairing?
What if it's Valkyrie and Brienne, and Valkyrie teaches Brienne about boozing and fucking?
And space.
Like, and then they just...
So Brienne's the all-business cop, yeah. And Valkyrie's the let-down-your-hair...
Yeah, loose cannon.
Lady Knight.
Yeah. And then,
I like that.
But then they both, like, fuck people up with swords. So,
yeah. <you know.
laughs> This is definitely on cable.
Valkyrie and Brienne? Come on. I don't know. This is great.
I'm super into it. They could bring, Valkyrie could bring Carol Danvers, too. She could hang out.
I didn't ask you to... Yes, and my cop movie. My cop movie, Valkyrie and Brienne of Tarth. Thank you.
I'm going to say Brawn and Rocket Raccoon are paid just more than the heists they're paid to stop all around Westeros. So, like, they have to, you know, stop the stealing of some really important stuff, but they always have a moment where they're like, should this be the moment we double cross? And become the world's best bandits. And that's the tension of the buddy cop show. When do they do that? When does the gold become too good?
For the raccoon.
It would have
Can
a
I just
better
say that
name
I really
than that.
Love the word caper, the word heist. it's just like a lot of like scrappy adventure words that I really enjoy.
And then Rocket Raccoon could have Jamie Lannister's golden hand that he pulled out of the snow from the Battle of Winterfell.
I'm going to get that
because he just had to get a hand. Yeah.
This is great.
Oh, what if it's Buckeye? Wow. Buckeye. And Jamie Lannister. Do they have like are there wounded appendages on opposite sides?
No. No, oh yeah, they are, because Jamie is his right hand and Bucky's his left arm.
Great, so they just like stand shoulder to shoulder with their legs.
And they're always high-fiving metallically.
Oh my god, why don't we just do it as this?
The show is just called it's just called Clank.
It's just called
Clank. Oh gosh. All right.
Perfect. We solved it.
All right, Dave, I have a very important raven that we have received from the Reach. As it turns out, not only did the Lannisters run off with all the grain, but all throughout the Reach, there are shortages of fermented crab, which, we know, is a huge problem for the brothel keeps. So is there anything we can recommend to help with this fermented crab shortage?
Well... Let me just clear this up, Neil. We're talking about good sex.
Well, yes, they do go to the brothels in an effort to have good sex, I believe.
Well, while your fermented crab is running low, but your need for good sex is running high, when your fires are burning low and you need to leech your penis, let me tell you, you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, it's BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue, and chew, like the thing you do with your mouth.
So blue like chew. The color of the giant's eye in which we all live?
Indeed, that same giant's eye, BlueChew. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredient as Viagra and Cialis. So you know they work as well as fermented crab. Don't take my word for it. Here is a very enthusiastic Joanna Robinson.
You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. So you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises.
That's right, we made her make a boner joke, because we are here talking about BlueChew.com. Neil?
Yeah?
Let me tell you something important. This isn't just for guys who can't perform, it's for any guy who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom, in the holds of ships, in fields. Actually, that's cold. Winter started. Maybe don't do that unless you're Dornish.
Just wherever you gotta go. On a map table.
Yeah, on a map table.
At a Dothraki wedding.
On the back of a dragon.
Definitely on the back of a dragon. So.
BlueChew.com.
Beyond the wall, south of the wall, on the wall, whatever it takes.
Definitely in Dorne. For sure in Dorne.
Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code STORM. Just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code STORM to try it for free. Get those boners! Can we end that way? And we're back for the STORM section. If you skip my rambling before, woe to you, my friend. Speculation and possible spoilers, ho. First, we're going to start with Avengers Endgame. Now, some of us have seen clips of this. I think at this point, maybe all of you have seen parts of clips that have been shown to press. And we've seen trailers, but none of the three of us have seen Avengers Endgame. We're just going to do our best to answer your questions. First one, from Patrick. It's actually more of a post-Endgame question. Well, I led up with the wrong thing. In the trailer for Spider-Man Far From Home, this is a really Spider-Man Far From Home episode. There's a shot of Peter swinging through Midtown Manhattan with Grand Central Station behind him, and the base of the former Stark/Avengers Tower is under construction just behind that. Since Avengers HQ is in the upstate compound, and who knows how many actual Earth-based heroes will make up the Earth's mightiest heroes after Endgame, could this shot be an Easter egg that reveals the Baxter building, or an Oscorp building, or will Marvel continue their trailer shenanigans and not include it in Far From Home at all?
Included this in the show notes. Why are we starting with like the weedsiest, like, sorry, okay.
What? Oh, I didn't. These aren't in any particular order.
Yeah, I started at the top. That was my mistake.
Sorry, it's not a bad question. I'm just like, I forgot my name while you were reading it, but it's not that bad question. Okay.
So here's the answer from the my Spider-Man obsessive position. This has always been like a hanging question since Spider-Man Homecoming because, as you remember, or maybe not remember, depending on how much you enjoyed Spider-Man Homecoming, one of the major heist events in that movie was the Vulture stealing all the equipment from when they moved out of Avengers Tower because they had sold Avengers Tower. So the question is started then, who bought Avengers Tower? And that's when sort of like the idea of an Oscorp building that then Sony could use, because Sony and Marvel got close to putting the Amazing Spider-Man Oscorp building on the Avengers skyline once, but was actually got like weeks before Avengers came out, before that deal finally flew through. So there was going to be a world where Oscorp of the Avengers existed in the same world. Now this could be it. The Baxter building is the Fantastic Four. For me, like, knowing how long these interconnecting worlds come together, that's too soon for them to have reached some sort of deal with 20th Century Fox. This would have had to happen before the acquisition for it to even like happen in Spider-Man Far From Home and mean anything to the plot. If it was a visual Easter egg to the Baxter Building, I'd be super surprised. I don't think the Marvel Cinematic Universe is on the ball or ahead of the ball. I think they're slightly behind the ball as far as the acquisition goes. What do I really think it is? I think the building's just under construction to take the Avengers stuff off of it. I don't think that much time has passed, in terms of construction time in New York, by the time we see that shot in Far From Home.
All right.
Cool.
I feel very comfortable with that answer.
Excellent. All right. From Josh in Seattle. What do you think the chances are that Captain Marvel destroys the Space Stone? They did a lot to set up the, quote, power that it made it can destroy it, unquote, with Scarlet Witch and Mind Stone in Infinity War. So I feel like that's a high likelihood. Let's throw to Joanna.
What? To me? I don't know, man. I think what will be true is that, well, something that, that, you know, Dave and I, well, let full disclosure. Wow. Okay. Sorry. Back here. I'm back on track. Here we go. The other night, Dave and I tried to figure out Avengers Endgame on a text chain that went on for a really long time where we came up with like every theory we could possibly, we're like, well, then maybe they are trapped inside the Soul Stone and then are there two time travels? Oh, one's astral projection. Like, I don't know. It just went crazy. And I'm sure the real answer is in there somewhere. But what I will say is that one theory that we like, is that they defeat Thanos pretty early on in Endgame. This is not a spoiler. We don't know this, but that they defeat Thanos pretty early on, and we're not the first to think of it. Defeat Thanos early on, but then they have to, like, do something else to undo the snap. So, like, Thanos is dead, but, like, they need to fix it somehow. And so will that involve hopping through time in order to destroy the Infinity Stones as they appeared throughout the MCU? Maybe. That seems kind of fun. To answer it in a way that, actually makes maybe a little even more logistical sense is the fact that, like, Brie Larson shot Avengers 4 before she made, Captain Marvel. And while they're not completely dissimilar, like she was saying at the Avengers press conference this weekend that she like hadn't really figured out who Carol was when she shot Avengers 4. So I don't think A, that she's in a shit ton of the movie and B, that she's like, that we can expect it to feel like a continuation of Captain Marvel. I feel like she's going to be there. As we've mentioned elsewhere, her look is super different. She might not read to us the same as she did in her own movie because it was shot after. And I don't know that there will be enough continuation of plot, for it to be that linked. Do any of those answers feel satisfactory?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we also have to understand that, like, there's a huge time difference between the events of Captain Marvel and here. So her reading differently doesn't seem, well, I don't imagine it's going to seem super off, but it will be different. You're right.
We can just, yeah, we can definitely just chalk it up to, you know, like, oh, well, she's been out in the world adventuring.
She did two other movies while she was gone. We'll show you those later.
She came back wrong or like whatever it is. You know what I mean? So, like.
Well, I think that it raises the larger, more interesting question, not necessarily more interesting, but a larger question about what are they going to do about the Infinity Stones after they figure out how to beat Thanos and undo what he did? Like, what happens to the Infinity Stones? You have to assume that there's some sort of effort to destroy some of them. And yeah, Carol's a good candidate for that. She's a very strong superhero, and that's interesting. That also feels like something that could be like several movies away, you know, like we don't really know what, I mean, at least I don't know what's going on after Endgame and beyond the fact that Spider-Man's fine, I guess. So yeah, I mean, I feel like that's sort of the kind of thread Marvel's going to want to pull. They just may not need to pull it here in Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I would say the, like, a lot of the thinking that leads to this question is absolutely correct. And if you were going to count a Infinity Stone that was, somewhat overly important in, Infinity War going in, the Space Stone and the Time Stone and the Soul Stone push out reality and power. Like every occurrence, especially I think since we've now learned the Tesseract specifically was behind, you know, was there at the beginning of Captain Marvel's arc and there at the beginning of Captain America's arc. And then we know from leaked sec photos, we're going to go back to the Battle of New York.
Oh yeah, we're in the storm. Okay.
So quick with the the Tesseract might be a good spotlight stone, but I don't know anything more than that. Joanna's equally right that I'm interested in them having to fix something more, because the idea of beating Thanos or just undoing the snap has more consequences than you think. I think there's a whole extra part to this movie that we're not seeing any hints of yet, but because we have no hints of it, I have no idea what it is. Moving on to the next question. From AJK in the Slack, in Avengers Endgame, which character are you most looking forward to seeing brought back, and what character's end do you think would be the most devastating to you?
I think I already answered this. I'm going to be upset when Steve Trevor dies. Even if they give him, like...
Steve Rogers.
I'm sorry. I said Steve Trevor before, too. Please don't kick me out of this podcast.
Please don't kick me out of the Chris Club.
Yeah. if Steve Rogers dies, we've speculated this before. We don't know this to be true, but like, I feel like they're not just gonna like kill Captain America. Like, we're not, this is still a Disney movie, as Dave likes to always remind us. We're not gonna see like the broken body of Captain America like we did in Ultron or something like that. So, in this like dream sequence that Tony had. So I feel like what's gonna happen is my favorite theory around this is like, Steve Rogers has to like remain in the Soul Stone for some reason, which is basically death, but not death. And so it's kind of heaven, but not Christian. And so, I've started calling it non-denominational heaven. So like, I would put all of my personal Infinity Stones betting on this movie ending with Steve getting his dance with Peggy in the Soul Stone as sort of like a way to do, don't worry, Steve has gone to heaven, without being like, and Jesus is real. You know what I mean? Sort of thing. So, that's my guess, which is like a way to have Chris Evans out of the franchise, which he desperately wants, but without killing Captain America in a way that will just like really upset children everywhere. So that's my theory for the workaround there. Like, and I think we like the idea, and Dave is the first one to kind of float this to me, that we like the idea of Tony like definitely retiring, like because for Pepper or something like that. So Tony definitely retiring, Steve going to non-denominational heaven. Maybe Black Widow dies, and I only say this because her spinoff movie is a prequel, and that makes me worried. But like, I don't know how many people they're gonna like actually kill, and how many heroes they're gonna actually kill. What do you guys think?
I think you're right, except I would throw in recently, because of footage shown at the press conference, Tony Stark's back on the pile for dying and then maybe being back by the end of the movie.
He's not going to.
For me, at least.
Yeah, okay. So, well, since this is a spoiler section, I guess we can mention, and it was written up on the internet, so we can mention that, like, and this is an idea that I first heard from Jermaine Lissier at IO9. Dave, did you hear it elsewhere? Or can we source Jermaine?
So on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, Patches actually describes it, and them using the body replacement technology they used on Steve Rogers or on Chris Evans. Ooh, now I'm just gonna confuse those two forever. On Chris Evans from Captain America: The First Avenger, to actually emaciate Tony more than in the trailers that we've seen.
Yeah, like that's what Jermaine was saying, that like, yeah, in the footage he's like very sickly looking. And so basically like the movie start, like they showed us footage that we believe is like the opening of the movie, and it's Nebula and Tony in space, and like you know, Tony leaves that message that you hear in the trailer, and it ends with him like seemingly asleep or passing out, Nebula picks him up and puts him in a chair like he's weighs nothing because she's a robot. And some people who saw it, including Jermaine and Patches maybe and stuff like that, think Tony is going to die there. And then they come back to Earth and then yada, 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 something. And they bring him back because we've seen him in the trailer. Like he's in the movie. Is it an alternative reality, Tony? Is it a Tony brought back to life? Is it like blah, blah? I really don't like that idea. And the only reason I don't like it is because I think it's really sloppy narratively if you bring a character back to life in one way and then like undust all these other characters, which is a different kind of resurrection. Like having two kinds of resurrections in your movie really bothers me. So that's the only reason why I'm against it. I like the idea of Tony being too sick to do anything at the beginning of the, like, in this first phase of the movie, they come back to Earth with Nebula. There's a shot of him in the trailer hugging Pepper and looking like very ill. So like my idea is that Tony gets like sidelined for the first part of the movie because he's literally too ill to go fight Thanos. Which is why, you know, when Doctor Strange is like, we need you for the end game, you know what I mean? Like Doctor Strange in the last movie sacrificed himself basically so that Tony could live. That's why they maybe go try to fight Thanos and don't win the first time because they don't have Tony because Tony's too sick to go play with them is a version of that story that I like better.
No dying. Well, the only thing that would, sickness or dying, the other thing that really supports this is, Tony's support staff stayed alive. Like Happy's alive, Pepper's alive. Yeah. So those characters, the only reason for them both to really be alive is for them to do something, and doing that something would be mourning Tony, I think. But like you said, that could also just be really sick. They could just be worried for stakes. But it does see, the only thing that is bugs me about the really sick theory is it seems like a half measure way to rush into that first battle. Like we make Captain America and Captain Marvel both very gung-ho about going at it right now, and therefore allow them to make a stupid decision, which, you know, even Game of Thrones does to us a lot of times, where characters make hasty decisions because there's only so much plot you can cover in so much amount of time. But for me, I think elevating death over sick, I may not like it more, but I wouldn't be second guessing it as like, I don't think it would come up on like a dumb Cinema Sins video like it would if he was just too sick to go.
Well, and they have like infinite time. I mean, I know that people are going to go into this having not seen any trailers. I know that some people are going to go into this and they engage with everything on a much lower level than we do and don't like break down every single fucking like screen cap and stuff like that. And so, you know, if Tony dies in the first 10 minutes or whatever, they're not going to be like, well, we saw him in the trailer, so he definitely lived. You know what I mean? Like, so there are people who would be like convinced that is true, but I think for most of us going in, we're like, will that really affect us? Because we're like, Tony Stark's not staying dead. Like, what is this? Like, well, this isn't real, you know what I mean?
Well, isn't that the secret thing behind this whole movie?
That is sort of the whole thing, which is that we don't trust Disney to be cruel, necessarily. You know, like, it is funny that we're talking about all this, you know, together with Game of Thrones, because we are going to go from talking about the property that is not trying to hurt us, just wants to make us excited, to the one that is trying to just destroy our souls. Where it's like, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if I believe that anybody is super dead in Avengers Endgame. Like Joanna's whole thing about Captain America, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Also, he's not dead. Like, that's just kind of sad. So,
it's not even sad. It's just sort of like, oh no, it's like giving Steve a happy
ending. It's going to be okay. It's like a warm blanket at the end. Whereas Game of Thrones is like, here's your blanket. Stab, 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 stab.
Yeah. Stab through the blanket.
They stab you through the blanket.
What a bitch move. All right. From Brian K on Twitter. If the gauntlet is broken, what keeps Thanos up at night more? Realizing that 40 or so years populations will be back to pre-snap levels, rendering his plan silly, or worrying about the remaining Avengers coming to get him? Neil.
I mean, he should be worried about Carol Danvers. That's the whole theme that I got from Captain Marvel, is that he should very much be afraid of her. Brian does bring up an excellent point, though, that I don't understand the rules of the snap quite so well, in that, Brian's probably right. Yeah, like in a couple decades, population levels will go back up. But does the snap have some sort of long-lasting thing, or is this like a one-time thing? Which, you know what, if it is a one-time thing, now that Brian mentions it, that's kind of a shitty plan.
Joanna, do you have a good answer?
I think what I'm excited about, this is sort of an answer. What I'm excited about, and it's not fun, in the final, Avengers film, this is sort of spoiling a piece that I'm working on, is like the fact that in the first, in Infinity War, we had this whole like Gamora Thanos thing that was interesting. In this one, we've got Nebula Thanos and like, Nebula's pissed. And so I'm, you know, like Thanos is this figure of abuse, this abusive father figure. And, these two women, who have like suffered on a very personal level, at his hand. I think that's a really interesting story to be at the center of this big, like, popcorn blockbuster situation. So.
Yeah, as long as they don't make it about Star-Lord, I'm good with it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, okay. Inside, spoiler for my article. Actually, I don't think I can do this because I think they just nodded at me. But I was talking to Marcus and McFeely, the screenwriters, this last weekend when I was in LA for the Avengers press junket, and we were talking about that. We were talking about like, the fact that this woman's abuse, Nebula's abuse, is like part of this movie. And they were like, basically they said, and I'm sure they said this to a lot of journalists who talked to them, but they, you know, they're sitting there and they're sitting right next to like, a poster for Avengers Endgame. And they turn to the poster and they're like, we picked who survived the snap, right? And if I look at that poster, I can tell you why we picked every single person. And why they care about defeating Thanos. And he was like, they were like, with Nebula, obviously, like, that's one of the easiest ones to explain why Nebula cares about defeating Thanos. She's been big on killing Thanos way before it was cool. Nebula was super into it, you know? And I said to them, I was like, yeah, I'm just really glad that you picked Nebula to survive and sort of like avenge Gamora and not like fucking Star-Lord. And they just like started nodding vigorously and laughing. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, I'm not interested in, you know, you guys fridging Gamora so Star-Lord can like, go avenge her. But like her really pissed off sister. Yeah. I'm here. I'm ready. Mm-hmm.
With whom she has a shared painful experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Hey, those guys are smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Brian K., to answer your question, he worries about the Avengers because the population growth is exponential towards the end, so it's actually going to take longer than 40 years to get back to as bad as it was. Moving on from Stove End on Slack. Stove's End on Slack. Who will be in the new Avengers? Assuming there will be a team after this, which would be dumb of Marvel to abandon the Avengers property. We may not be getting phases like we're expecting. Like, I don't think we're going to necessarily meet all of these new Avengers in their own individual movies and then they all slam together. I think there'll be like little team up movies in between it. I think the idea of like all these movies clashing together in giant Avengers movies, will feel like events that stand alone on their own. Not necessarily the culmination of, them having to try things. I think that's also a good way for them to have many different Avengers teams. If we were following the arc of these three dudes, for these first 22 movies in the future, I think the team dynamic isn't necessarily going to be as focused on a few characters. What do I know? Except Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, if they could negotiate that deal with Sony, which would be an extension, but I think both companies would love it. Black Panther will be like your, I don't know, Hulk, Thor, like Doctor Strange, kind of as basically a Tony Stark replacement. Anyway, Captain Marvel is going to come in to be, I think, your core like leader thing, and that is going to lead way to
Trevor. Sorry, just making.
Yeah, you're Steve. Well, and also that's not wrong about Steve Trevor either. But like, yes, you're Steve Rogers, your core person, and then I think the more importantly, she will be the front facing side of the Avengers. So instead of the old Avengers were, I'm a billionaire who could keep you safe with weapons, paired with I'm the thing that beat the Nazis, you know, paired with like super science and a god. Now Carol Danvers not only gets to be in front of the Avengers, but in front of the world, basically dealing with the fact that there are intergalactic threats every day. And that sort of thing is going to lead to Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, being able to idolize her in the way she does, and we'll get to get that origin story all wrapped up eventually. And I also think Captain Marvel will launch Nova, but her ability to launch so many new generation characters, I think, makes her the perfect pick to lead the new Avengers, well, outside of the fact that she's super popular.
They also... No, it's not Nova. It's they teased Adam Warlock, right, at the end of Guardians 2?
Yes.
And he's part of the Nova situation, storyline, right?
Maybe.
So there's but there's like the opportunity to bring some of these different things together. Like you could see the Guardians of the Galaxy maybe showing up.
I think it's more possible that whoever the new Avengers are, they're not just avenging Earth like Tony Stark made in the first statement, but the Avengers are international. There's a universal.
Planetary, intergalactic, right?
Basically, yes. There's a there's a whole bunch of Infinity stories that take place that are written by Jonathan Hickman that deal with this idea of a... intergalactic Avengers trying to battle all these different forces.
I bet space stuff is so much easier to shoot because it's just like all green screen all the time. You know what I mean? Like, you never have to go outside and have drones fly over your production.
You never have to do an accurate trailer because you just make them somewhere else. All right. Hey. Well, everybody will be going back to, what is it, Vormir forever. Like, every trailer takes place on the Soulstone planet and it doesn't show up. Something like that. All right. I think those were a lot of good tidbits on what we think about Avengers without necessarily calling our shots in a way we'll be completely wrong. But make sure to stay tuned to your feed, because right smack dab in the middle of a whole bunch of Game of Thrones episodes, we're going to have an Avengers Endgame episode. We know what you like.
All right, now is the time on the podcast where we like to thank our small council members. And usually we like start with our new small council members and then work our way through to our veterans and take it in chunks. We have so many new small council members, though, because I guess because of this Game of Thrones thing that we're doing, that we can't even read all of our new small council members. So if you don't hear your name this week, rest assured you are on our list. We will get to you next week. But for right now, we want to thank Belinda Hogan, Liz Froment, Callie Serrano, Jeremiah Perez, Micah Wood, Sarah Gates, Jane Phelps, Christina McNeisett, Brian Latino, and Valerie Harvey. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, McNeisett. Thank you guys so much, you new small council members, you.
And I would like to thank, on behalf of us, Ben Block, Maggie Paulin, Jesse Brixen, Benjamin Jacoby, Matt Hayes, Tiffany Welker, Laura Kaminsky, Kathy Schaberg, Scott Karnitz, and Emily.
All I hear when I hear all new small council members is all names that I've never said out loud before. So here we go. Thank you, and I'm sorry to David Colley, Jen Betke, Kobe Waddell, Michael Gould, Zach Gross, Katie Boyd, Deanna Sorak, Michelle Tepper, Jason Allen, Mark Stevenson, and John Shen. Thank you, newbies. You make this so possible. And we're back for our storm for Game of Thrones, the final season. As with Avengers Endgame, we haven't actually seen any of it. The first episode has been seen at a premiere, which means that some truths are out there, but certainly not the content of the actual ending. If you want to know how we think it's going to, or how we hope it ends, then you're going to have to get on our bonus segment. But here's our best answers.
So we should be clear. We are going to talk about everything we know about Game of Thrones?
Yes. This is the storm section of the Game of Thrones.
I'm not questioning you. I'm just reiterating for the people listening. Everything we know about Game of Thrones is now something we might talk about. So that includes the events of season 8, episode 1, which is out there on these here internets if you want to find it, and other things that we know about Game of Thrones, I'm just saying it so you can hear me say it and make your own life decisions.
Yeah, if you need to jump off, you've already heard the BlueChew.com ad, the week has peaked. We'll see you later. All right, let's kick it off. From Claire via email, to follow up on last episode's who's going to be zombie resurrected question, the first wave of season 8 casualties are also fodder for Arya's bag of faces. I have two questions. Whose faces do you think Arya might steal as resources for the Cersei-facing war? Also, can Arya take the face of a white? Probably since we all know Jaime is very likely to die in the Battle of Winterfell. My favorite theory is that Arya takes his face in order to kill Cersei, fulfill the Valacor prophecy in a roundabout way, but also, like in more crackpot territory, the Hound.
I like that one.
So, two separate questions here. One about the technical rules around face stealing. Can you steal a white's face? And two, who is going to end up in the bag of faces? Given the answers to question one.
Well, it's funny because I think I brought up the, like, Arya takes a White Walker face last season when we first figured out she was getting the cat's paw dagger. You know, when we figured that out, I was like, okay, so Arya's gonna have an assassin's blade that can kill a White Walker. Like, surely Arya's gonna kill the Night King, like, with her, like, assassin's training and her Valyrian dagger. Like, all the pieces are coming together. I've since learned that Arya, I believe this is true, that Gendry is gonna be making Arya a new weapon out of her Valyrian dagger, which is a spear staff situation. And so the dagger is sort of not really, and then that's not really an assassin's weapon, is it? But when I thought about Arya taking a White Walker face, like, I liked the idea of her turning into, like, one of his lieutenants and then, like, stabbing him or something like that. It just sounds very, like, crunchy and icy, you know what I mean? Her, like, sawing off, like, and sort of like squeaking, like cheese between teeth sort of thing. Anyway, so I don't know if it's gonna happen that she turns into a White Walker, but that being said, I'm pretty sure at this point the show has decided that faceless man technology works however the fuck they decide it works. It's the same thing with the flaming sword. Flaming sword works however the fuck they want it to work, and that's how it works. So I'm pretty sure, like, we would all sleep better at night in season 8 if we stopped worrying about the rules. It's not our nature to stop worrying about the rules, but I think we'll feel better if we do. In terms of, like, a face she could use in the bag, like, I'm hoping we get to see, well, maybe not, because we know what happens in the first episode. It doesn't happen there. But, like, I was thinking it would be kind of fun to see Baelish back again. That being said, like, a lot of people saw Baelish die. Like, her Walder Frey gambit only worked well because it just sort of, like, happened altogether. But, like, she killed Baelish in front of a bunch of people, and so I don't think she's going to be using Littlefinger. Like, that's going to spread. People have already talked about Littlefinger dying, probably.
I think you're getting close there in the sense that what would be the purpose of Arya's bag of faces? There's getting to Cersei, and there is the possibility of having to be in a situation where you can't be a Lannister, a Stark, or a Targaryen. So then I think you could throw, like, your Varyses on there, you could throw your Melisandres on there, you could throw your Davoses on there, but, like, the whole hand-level political operative, I think, would be an interesting way, because who else is going to be able to move through war-torn Westeros that way?
Would this solve our, like, weird lingering questions we have around Nikolai Coster-Waldau? Like, how many episodes? Like, cause that theory that, like, Arya wears Jaime's face and kills Cersei has been around. Jaime kills Cersei, fulfills the Valonqar theory cause he's technically her little brother, blah, blah, blah. That's all been around. I don't love it, but.
Okay. So what about this? I'm spitballing here.
All right.
Jaime Lannister returns as a white in the Battle of Winterfell. Mm-hmm. And they have to burn him because he died. episodes later, Jaime Lannister shows up to talk to Cersei, kills her. Arya used the cover of the Battle of Winterfell to kill Jaime Lannister to take his face, because that's the only way she's going to get to Cersei.
That's crazy. I love it. it's not going to happen, but I love it.
Yeah, I do like the idea of Arya on a, like, sort of... And full credit to Kim Renfro, because I had this very fruitful lunch with Kim where we talked about, like, things we thought and stuff like that. And she used this phrase for us, so I'm going to credit her, which is, I think she said, like, faceless man side quest or something like that. Like, basically, we know that there's going to be a Battle of Winterfell in episode 3. And we know there's going to be a battle for King's Landing, and I think it's episode 5. One rumor that I've heard is that Clegane Bowl, quote unquote, will happen at the Battle of King's Landing, as in the Hound is going to take the opportunity to, like, just kill his brother while in the fight. You know what I mean? And if, Arya uses that opportunity to do some faceless man shit to kill Cersei, I could see that happening. I think one of the reasons a lot of people think the faceless man, I just don't love the faceless man stuff because I'm not looking forward to all season people being like, do you think that character is really Arya? And it's just going
to
like,
be well, right. So like you have to narrow it down to situations where that's the biggest dramatic punch, which is why I say like, it'd be fun if like not only Jaime show. So when the dead person shows up, I think we have to know it's Arya because we're already on the lookout for faceless man. So if the questionability of that person being dead is also in question, or we thought he was dead and then he shows up and that's where the audience is watching this tension filled scene of this person who's not supposed to be there. For me, that makes it a better dramatic tool than how a lot of people propose it be used, which is sort of like a patch to make people feel better to get to like a different point. I think it is along with Bran's visions, along with nobody has to actually stay dead except when we actually love them, like are all storytelling tools that Game of Thrones could pull out, much like Avengers Endgame could pull out the Infinity Stones basically to do whatever it wants. I hope it doesn't need to lean on that, but I think there are very scant situations where I wouldn't mind that option.
It does raise what I think is probably my most interesting end of Game of Thrones question, which is we spent a lot of time with several characters. Actually, Game of Thrones, the show, spent a lot of time in a place where George didn't want to be. Like, George wanted to skip over a bunch of this stuff, yeah, and get to the point where everybody was like a fully formed assassin or warrior or whatever. So the show made the conscious decision a long time ago to tell us that Arya's ability to change faces or her whole journey to become a faceless man is very important. So my question is, how do they pay that off? What do Weiss and Benioff think is the payoff for that? And I feel like this does kind of feel like one where it's like the easiest answer is during the scuffle at King's Landing. She's looking to do the thing that she keeps saying she wants to do, which is kill the queen. So, you know, whether or not she's successful or how exactly the details work out, but it's that feels like one of the things they have to pay off, just like Bran's abilities. Like, what the hell was the point of all that if Bran isn't super important to the end, or is the end none of this mattered? Everyone's dead now, like, because that's also on the table, I guess. But yeah, so like those are the sort of mythical things, you know. Like, it would be weird if they got through all this and they didn't sort of explain why Beric was still around, or like if Beric Dondarrion, after his entire existential journey, gets to the end of his thing and like they just never, he was just there and kept getting resurrected. They gotta explain some of this stuff.
Well, I don't think they will.
Beric's probably on the chopping block for things we need to explain.
I think Beric lived this long on the show so that he could bring the gift of lightsabers to us.
Well, and so that he could tell John the thing about not finding any joy in this world, which is exactly what Maester Aemon told him in Kill the Boy. He's just there to be like sage guy who keeps coming back to life, I guess.
One theory that I read is that Beric is going to die saving Gendry as sort of like a make good for selling him and his penis blood off to Melisandre in season 3.
Yeah. Well, and I think we have to expect a lot of that on that like second tier of characters. Like when they go out, it'll have some sort of callback story.
Remember?
Who was it? Which actor was it this week that said that this Game of Thrones actor, and I just can't remember who said that there will be storylines that they come back to and close up that you did not expect.
Yeah, so, I don't remember who said that, but someone did say that.
So my mind immediately goes to like, we get some sort of closure, we get some sort of Dornish presence. Like maybe they go back and find Ilaria or something. Which they don't need to do, but who knows?
I feel like they're not going, well, here's a stupid reason why I think they're not going to. Indira Varma would not do my podcast. And I feel like Indira Varma is like, well, she was at the premiere, but I felt like, so maybe I should just take it personally, but it kind of felt like she was like, yeah, I'm over Game of Thrones. No, thank you. But
she's, or she's hiding something.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead. You were saying Ilaria.
Well, yeah. So I think that, so my mind goes to stuff like, are they going to bring something back with Dorne? Is there a horn involved in anything? You know, like what are the surprises? And so, I've been trying to think of those. And failing mostly.
But I think you're both absolutely right that like the faceless, something has to happen with that fucking bag of faces.
Right.
I'm just like, yeah.
I think those are the two things. Arya's ability to do faces and Bran's vision. Like those things have to be paid off because they're faces Stark children.
Feels like a narrative cheat that I, and so do Bran's visions that I don't like having in the plot. Cause it's just an easy way to do something clumsy. And like, you know, we're in the end game now. Like it feels like they could do something clumsy. That being said, since this is the storm, we should say that Faye Marseille and Tom, I'm not going to pronounce his last name.
Valisha.
Say it again.
Valisha.
Great. Beautiful. Were spotted around the set. So Jaqen H'ghar and the Waif could maybe have something to do, or it could be one of those
things. I mean, like, they could be faces in Arya's bag.
Well, she slapped,
oh, no.
The Waif's face up on the wall already. She didn't kill Jaqen, though, as far as we know. But,
oh, Melisandre was my other one. Sorry. The one I couldn't think of is like, what happens with Melisandre? But we'll have to come back to that.
She has to die on the shores of Westeros.
I've heard some fun, cool shit about that. Do you want to hear a fun theory?
Yes.
It's a theory.
I feel like the listeners are like, they've abandoned the questions, but I want to hear this.
I don't know. I can't remember now, what's theory and what's real anymore. To be honest with you, but, yeah, this season more than any other season, I'm having trouble distinguishing between real leaks and not. So please take everything I say with a grain of salt. But, one thing I read about was Melisandre coming back with some of the Red Priests and Priestesses, which is something that we've expected, right? Because you don't show the fact that, like, all these Red Priests and Essos, like, give a shit about Daenerys without, like, bringing them back in the final season, right? So Melisandre gets to, like, Deus Ex Machina at the Battle of Winterfell with, like, some, you know, the Red Priests, and that would be, like, a really cool visual because they all dress alike and look great. And then, this is my fave, Melisandre starts to raise Fire Whites to fight the Ice Whites. And
isn't Beric a Fire White?
Well, it's a question, but he could be.
Or someone else discovers that they can raise Fire Whites.
So wait,
is
this
time for that? There's no time for another whole nother person to be like, I can raise people from the dead too. We know someone can raise people from the dead, and it's Melisandre.
So that's fair.
The multiple flaming sword video that is leaked.
Yeah.
Do we think that Beric does that, or is that potentially Firewhite?
I think that that's Beric being, and I gotta say, I think it's Beric, the Hound, and maybe Jorah would be my guess for who those three are.
He just gives them fire sword powers.
Well, because anybody can do it. It's totally chill. You just rub your hand on your sword.
Kim asked Richard Dormer, I think, in New York, and he said it's just a two-word incantation. And we're like, sure, bud, it used to be a blood ritual, but that's okay. It's got to be the Hound, right? Because one of the thematic things we need to close the loop for with the Hound is like him confronting his fear of fire even more to do something heroic, right? So give the Hound a flaming sword, like, yeah.
A flaming Valyrian steel sword?
Well, the Flaming Valyrian Steel Sword, that's Jorah's, right? Because he has Heartsbane. So mm-hmm. I like the idea of Jorah having a Flaming Valyrian Steel Sword. Anyway, so that's what I think that is. I like the idea of Fire Whites. If they did Fire Whites, though, they would have to like visually distinguish them in some way, which they've not bothered to do with Beric or Jon. But like they would have to give them red eyeballs or something like that, which I kind of like the idea of, to be honest with you. And then one more thing, one other thing that I read, and this sounds like too ridiculous to be believed, but it's kind of fun, is Melisandre, because she has like some sort of control over fire, sort of, I don't know, who knows, can take control of Viserion's flame, his blue flame.
Whoa.
And like redirect it or whatever. So this idea that she's going to like sort of be doing some sorceress battle with the Night King on the dragon in the sky sort of thing. Like we're going
yeah, we
full
need,
high fantasy.
We need the religions. We need the magic. We need these people to show up for this final season, because if we had to go through all this other crap and none of that stuff is real and matters and it's just about dragons, I'm going to be a little frustrated with that. I don't think, I mean, there's plenty of time. They'll figure it out, but you know, come on. We need the magic.
I'm going to guess back on the questions by skipping ahead to some, to specifically deal about some stuff that I know we've been hinting about, but should probably talk about. From Shane, I'm seriously concerned about Tyrion's arc. He is such a beloved character and clearly a main protagonist. After the now largely dismissed secret Targaryen theory, predictions about him have mostly fizzled. What are your hopes slash thoughts? Also, very importantly, where did I get this image in my mind of him sitting on the Iron Throne with the crowd tilted to the side of his head as the final image of the show, and the idea of it being George's little joke, Lord of the Ring, Hobbits rule throwback? I know I didn't think it up, but so many years of lore, I honestly can't remember where I read or heard the idea.
I feel
who
like
who wants to talk to Shane?
I feel like there's an image out there somewhere of like Tyrion with a crown. You know, from like early on in the series that I've seen before.
I think there's one of Peter Dinklage with a crown.
Yeah, I think you're right to be worried.
We're not going to be coy.
Go,
right?
Joanna.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, do it. Rip the Band-Aid right off.
Here we go. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Peter, Tyrion Lannister, frustrated that his queen Daenerys has not listened to him that much, frustrated that she's fucking Jon Snow, frustrated that Jon Snow gets to ride a dragon and he doesn't, frustrated that his great ideas are not being listened to,
frustrated that he doesn't have any blue chew,
.com,
frustrated that ZipRecruiter is not okay. Anyway, this is speculation, then we'll get to what we know. Speculation is like he will have some idea for the Battle of Winterfell and people won't listen to him, and then he'll feel like if they had listened to him, what happens won't have happened because Winterfell falls, right? And so like, you know, he basically feels frustrated, not listened to, like he's the smartest person in the room and no one is listening to him and all his ideas are good. Or he sees something so horrific, like maybe his brother Jaime dying or something like that at the Battle of Winterfell, that like he vows that that will never happen again. So when we have the Battle of King's Landing and it looks like maybe the Night King's gonna win or something like that, Tyrion Lannister, fulfilling a lot of seeds planted in the book and the show, will burn King's Landing with some wildfire to prevent the occupants of King's Landing from being turned into more fodder for the Army of the Dead. And then somehow, and we don't know how, the good guys will win, and like Tyrion then just like mass murdered a bunch of people. And so then Jon and Daenerys, I think Jon and Daenerys is whoever the surviving heroes, but I believe Jon and Daenerys are confirmed to survive, have to then execute him for war crimes. And he dies and we don't know how, but I think the most fitting and ironic thing would be to be burned by a dragon, in a sort of mirror back to that, season 5 scene. And also, you know, Tyrion's whole thing had been like, I wanted to ride a dragon, and the whole secret Targaryen thing and stuff like that. So there's...
Well, and there's also a good thing that since I've happened to be in the middle of season 7, that's the promise that Daenerys makes for any traitors to Varys, burned alive. And then she does it with the Tarleys, obviously, but yeah, that would be consistent.
So, so there you go. That's like 90... 85%, 90% just like a straight leak with some embellishments of character thrown in there. But
put Tyrion in your Deadpool and press all your friends.
Yeah. Put Tyrion in Deadpool and not just dead, but like, but that's the idea. That's why I'm so excited.
That's the bittersweet.
That the rest of our heroes can live, but Tyrion will die. Like, and hearing everyone who's like, oh, I'm excited for Tyrion to sit on the Iron Throne or something like that. I'm like, ugh. if you think that's how this ends, you haven't been paying attention sort of thing, you know, like, but this idea of like, not just like a fan favorite, but like George's favorite and like all sorts of
right.
stuff.
Right. The like, character that George loves the most.
And then he just like, he falls. You know what I mean? Like he falls. And through his mm-hmm. own character flaw. And we've seen, and once you know this, if you know this and you rewatch the series as we have been doing,
oh, it's fascinating.
This, oh, it's there. Yeah. Like it's fucking there.
Oh, yeah. This know? Is the thing. This yeah. is the third. What? This is the third thing it, that Weiss and Benioff were worried about. There was we the think. Red Wedding.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No. The, yeah. I thought it was.
No, the three things were Shireen burning, Hodor dying.
Oh, yeah. The three post books things. Yeah. And it makes sense. I mean, this is a character who had, you know, what started as sort of, with no power other than, you know, being the third Lannister child, then gained power and lost it in some horrific fashion. And then has now fought to regain power sort of more honestly. And then for it to then become something where he leads himself down a bad path. I think is really, super heartbreaking potentially. And I think that's exactly what Game of Thrones wants to do with their last season. So that's why this, when you first told me about this one, I was like, yep, that feels right. We don't need to ask any more questions. That said, if it is a fake leak, it's the greatest fake leak of all time.
Yeah. Well, we know, King's Landing burns and, from like set photos, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we know there's a fire.
Like originally we thought it was like maybe Dragonfire, but this idea of it being wild, it just feels like it should be wildfire. Like that Tyrion knows that there was a cache of wildfire in the city. You know, he already used some for Blackwater and he used it to save the city. And then he uses it again to destroy the city that Cersei blew up the Sept, which is not in the books. Well, she blows up the Tower of the Hand, right, in the books, but like, or is going to, fuck, I forgot.
Oh, she lights the Tower of the Hand on fire.
Right.
She doesn't like blow it up.
Yeah. Okay. But like, that feels like a good remember the wildfire? We did it in season 6 so you don't forget. You know what I mean?
Well, and then we had the vision of burn them all.
Yeah.
And it's all like, about the Mad King.
About the Mad King and about like what Jaime tarnished his reputation to prevent. And Tyrion brings about, you know what I mean? Plus there's also his speech at the trial where he says, I saved you. I saved the city and all your worthless lives. I should have let Stannis kill you all. And then he's like, what does he say? I wish I were the monster. I wish I was the monster you think I am. I wish I had enough poison for the whole pack of you. I would gladly give my life to watch you all swallow it. So like, and we should say, right, that in the books, Tyrion is post trial. Tyrion is a much darker figure than he is in the show. So that's a whole thing. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrion Lannister.
All right. I'm going to give two more questions before we wrap up. This one is sort of an adaptation question, but I think keeps us in the same realm. From Sanda. Do you think the ending we'll get in the show is the same as we'll get in the books? I know George apparently told D&D the ending, but what is the chance that he deviates significant or otherwise for the show? From the show, could it be as drastic as differing Azor's Ahai or character deaths? What would any endgame change or would any endgame changes be minor? This was something I was thinking about, which is that I think you guys are right that the Tyrion thing lines up with a George-like decision. This is me having not read any of the books. That sounds correct to me. But I do think that we're going to see a lot around that could change, because I do think a lot of the promises of a visual series are different from, a not visual series. So I think that, you know, when you're a novelist trying to write a series of 7 books and people come along to adapt it and you have to tell them stuff, yeah, you tell them the ending, but the parts all around that is what actually makes something end. The way that we could feel like the Faceless Man thing's important is, I think, different. And when you're talking about it as a storytelling device for television versus as a literary one, if it's on TV, I want to see three different types of fire at King's Landing. If it's in the book, maybe that all doesn't need to happen at the same place. Maybe that's where I wanted it, the fucking trident, because that seems like it would go around. So I think that there's still some wiggle room in the sense that no one should feel spoiled for books by the end of this television series that has for several years been written as a season-to-season television series. Joanna, do you disagree?
No, I agree. And I'm not going to talk too much because I just talked for so long and I apologize. But I agree that the Tyrion thing feels George through and through. The love triangle stuff, which we know from the original outline. So like Tyrion and Dany and Jon versus it was going to be Jon and Tyrion and Arya, right? When there was going to be a time jump. So like all of that feels true. You know, big epic battles. I don't know if that's true. So, you know, like the Tyrion thing feels like the same end point that they were headed towards. Neil?
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said big epic battles, because I think the difference will be that, like, I think Weiss and Benioff have to get to the emotional truth of what George is trying to tell. And they're going to, I think if they do it right, they'll get that right. Like, it'll feel like an ending that George would write if George was just writing a TV ending. Maybe that's sort of the best version. And I think that the show, all the things that we've seen the show do to be more efficient have revolved around creating spectacle and around orienting us around the threat of the dead. Whereas the books have sort of a different thing. The books are all about the political maneuverings. The books are very much more interested in the humans than the undead. So there's this, I think that it'll feel like we're seeing the same ending, but from different perspectives. So when we finally get the books, assuming we finally get the books. So I think, but the show is like, they have to lean into, we need everyone who just watches the show to follow along. And we have to put all the money on the screen. So in that regard, the details will be very different. And I think Dave's probably right too. Like, this whole idea of like there being a huge battle at King's Landing at the end with three different types of fire, like in the books, that could be like five different things happening at once through the POV of, you know, eight different characters that we read over the course of 1,000 pages. So there's just a more complicated, more intricate version that George has in his mind. But it'll be curious to see if, especially with the Tyrion thing, like if they catch that, the right feeling at the end, I don't think people are going to care that much when it's all said and done. I mean, some people will be book people and some people will be show people, but I think that I think George's foundation is so strong that if they just sort of get something that feels right, they'll be fine.
What's interesting is that you know, early on, Weiss and Benioff were really happy to say, like, what was in George's book and what wasn't, you know what I mean? So they're like, Shireen Burning, that was in George, that was George's, and like, Hodor, that's George's. And then, like, somewhere in between Hodor, season six, and now, they made some kind of deal with George, where they're not going to confirm what's in the books anymore. Which I think is nice. And so, you know, I don't know that we'll ever, at least not from them, because that's the deal they've made, get confirmation that, you know, the Tyrion stuff is George's book thing. You know what I mean? Because this is a new pact that they've made with George. And I think it's something that they've, like, that George asked for, and they said, okay, George, you got it. You know? So, I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
All right, final question. We're going to try to keep this a show-only question, even though it does use the word chapters, from Cat P on Twitter. If the end of the story gives context changes to the meanings of the middle chapters, how much do you think these final chapters can and will change our understanding of the whole shebang? Which bits do you hope the end will change in hindsight? I think, sort of going back to the answer that I said before, because I'm thinking of this now as a television series written from season to season. I don't think it's going to do a lot of recontextualizing of middle chapters. I think beginning, end, we'll touch on a lot of that, but I don't think we're going to have a lot of, I don't know, remember Quaithe or whatever from season two. Wasn't she important? That I don't think happens. Neil?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there are some big questions. Like I said, to me, it's all about like all the stuff that we spent time with, the Faceless Men, the Red God. How much does this matter to the end game? You know, when you watch season seven, it really does seem like it's coming into focus that it's all about humanity needs to get together around Jon and Daenerys and fight this threat. What I expect from Game of Thrones is that that's not the entire story. And my hope, like I said, is that some of the things that we spend a lot of time on in the middle come back and are very important at the end. Beyond that, we don't need to know Quaithe. We don't really need to know anything more about her. I'm trying to think of other things that happened in the middle of the show. like they dumped Lady Stoneheart probably for this reason. If we're being super honest about why Lady Stoneheart didn't come back, is that she probably has a role to play for a little while in the books, but in the end game, she doesn't have a role.
Yeah, I asked.
She's just your everyday Black Panther.
Well, she's there to like keep reminding us about resurrection and stuff like that. I asked Brian Cogman this, I can't remember if I cut this out of the, no, I didn't cut it out of the podcast, so it's in there, but I asked him, I was like, did you make the decision not to use Lady Stoneheart after you talked to George about the end game? Like, did you find out that Lady Stoneheart wasn't important? And so you're like, cool, we're not going to do it. And he was like, no comment. So I don't know if that's the answer, but like, it does feel true that like everything that was cut from the show, like, a lot of the Dorne stuff or the fake Aegon stuff, stuff like that is stuff that is there, you know, is not essential to the end game. But like, if you go back to the beginning, I was thinking about this. I was like, if they had that attitude from the beginning, like, would we even get, I don't know, the Tyrells, you know, like the Tyrells are not there in the end game. Like there's a lot of stuff that's not there in the end game. You know, I don't know, George, you know, my assessment is always like George expanded too broadly, got too into his world that he was building and built it out too far and has yet to figure out how to rein it back in. But I think the show, by the restrictions of adaptation or whatever it is, cut back too much. So there's some like sort of sweet spot in the middle there.
I was talking to somebody on Twitter that my theory is that if they would have done 80 hours, they could have added in some of this stuff and it would have been, you know, like season five wouldn't have been such a downer if you had some like characters to root for. So,
yeah.
That's just a theory.
My last reaction to Kat is my interpretation of her question is a little different from yours, which is not like, are we going to see Quaithe again or whatever, but it's more like what we were talking about with Tyrion, where it's like, I think the ending will recontextualize our understanding of Tyrion throughout. And that was evident from all of us who rewatched knowing what we know about what's going to happen to Tyrion. And so then Tyrion becomes not like, oh, the scrappy underdog we can root for, but this like almost like frustrated toxic masculinity thing, you know, a little bit like that's a thing that gets added in where it's like, it's the guy who, you know, we think of him as our hero and it's like, he's been so mistreated, like he deserves to rise, but there is an entitlement that Tyrion carries with him where he's like, if only everyone realized it, I'm the smartest fucking person here. And it's like, that's the, you know, like Ned has his own burdened with too much honor that, you know, in my opinion, wound up creating a shitty childhood for Jon Snow that didn't really need, you didn't need to go that extreme with your honor, Ned. And you went extreme with your honor again and got your, like, you know, got yourself killed and put your family in peril, Ned. That's like a hero type that we thought we should root for, and really that there was like a flaw buried in that. And there's a hero type in Tyrion that we feel conditioned to root for, the scrappy underdog, but there's like there's a flaw hidden in there that I think will become, you know, I'm really excited for this to happen. Like, I'm excited for how pissed off everyone is going to be. This feels like such a George thing. And like, you know, because people are going in, like, people are going into this final season and they're like, oh, they're going to kill people. It's like, no, it's not about, like, watching Daenerys die. That's a boring story. Daenerys dies trying to save the kingdom. Jon Snow dies trying to save the kingdom. Where's the, like, juice in that? But, like, our heroes have to kill this other guy that we thought also was the hero, and he does this thing and he's wrong, but he's not entirely wrong because we didn't want to see a bigger army of the dead. You know, like, it's just, it's turtles all the way down, and it's so good. And like, if they stick it, I'm going to be so stoked. So
what you're saying is it's all about execution.
I've heard that somewhere, yes, before.
I believe this is the grand unifying theory of this podcast.
Oh, yeah. That means, Neil, what are we doing next week?
Dave, Joanna, I am so excited to announce that next week we will be recapping Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 1, title TBA. I don't know what the title is. Does anybody know what the title is?
No, it's not out.
Okay, so the title's not out yet, but the episode will be the next time you hear from us in your podcast feed.
Does anyone want to take my bet that the finale is called A Dream of Spring? Does anyone want to, like, bet against me?
I wouldn't bet against that. They ended with Winds of Winter in season 6, so.
I will shave part of my head. I will have this on the table if anyone wants to take this bet.
Wait. Is this one of those bets where,
no. If I'm wrong? Here's where this bet goes. If it's not called A Dream of Spring, I get out of my Star Wars bet.
No one's ever letting you out of that Star Wars bet.
No, because you were so confident in that very obviously bad story decision.
Even Rian Johnson, though, is now, like, walking back to us. So, like, you might get to keep your beard, buddy. Don't worry about it. Like,
yeah.
Rian Johnson's like, it's okay if JJ retcons this. And I'm like, ugh.
Yes. Let it flow through you.
You fools. Oh, yeah. That's another thing. If you're still listening to this podcast, you're probably into a lot of things that we are. Let us know if you see anything cool at Star Wars Celebration. We'll be trying to pay attention. Certainly probably won't work out. But we will be having lots of Game of Thrones content for you around the internet. Where could we find it? Joanna Robinson.
If you go to vanityfair.com/thrones and enter the promo code thrones, you can subscribe to Vanity Fair where, for $7.50 only, where you can read my content, about.
And you get a free tote bag. It's a very nice tote bag.
So good. Also, if you go to www.westeros, that's very Jorah Mormont. Westeros. If you go to WesterosUpdate.com, www.WesterosUpdate.com, you can subscribe to my literal newsletter, which will be going out on Mondays, which will have all my Thrones content. So you can do that, or you can follow me on Twitter at JoeWriteThis.
And Neil Miller.
You can get me over at FilmSchoolRejects.com. We got all kinds of fun Game of Thrones stuff planned, written by me and a bunch of other smart people. You can also follow me at Rejects, and make sure you follow One Perfect Shot on Twitter, because we are doing all kinds of Game of Thrones shots, which is a big thing for me. And also don't forget to follow our show at Storm of Spoilers on Twitter. We got a lot of fun stuff coming for you. Don't forget about the Patreon, patreon.com/Storm of Spoilers. And if you want to send a raven with your thoughts, questions, whatever you have about the episode, send it to stormofspoilers@gmail.com. And even though we are doing the small council session, we still will have some Q&A stuff in the normal episodes. So.
Excellent. And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. I will be posting my Thrillist.com Game of Thrones coverage up there And yeah, guys, it's been a long night, but it's over. Well, we will see you next week for the final season of Game of Thrones. Don't fall down.